I just overall want to appreciate, of course, the presentation. I want to implore the DSI, I know it's a petty issue, and we've heard your corridor talks, Celine, about how members of parliament like to comment on presentations. Why didn't you put a comma here? Why didn't you use this type of template? It affects our interaction with the work. If you could kindly consider in the future not only presenting the plans, the summarized plans in the presentation in words, but also just add a few graphs and tables. I think a nice example would be a little bit, Dr. Pelle, what you did, but more so what they did at the NRF. So just infusing the two together just to make it a bit more tangible. Of course, we are supposed to read the 208-page document, but I think it will just make it a bit more succinct for us to do our work if the DSI could consider that going into the future. I'd like to then just ask, you know, when we look at the support we give to SMMEs for their innovations and in order for them to commercialize their innovations, I think when I look at the 208 or so page document, we indicate that we want to support about 25 SMMEs in terms of their innovations and then for them to be able to commercialize. And I think that for me says, yeah, I think we said 25, and then from next year onwards, we're looking at 35. So what do we consider to be support? Does it have to be the full package of support, or can we give support in different ways? Because I think, you know, when the chair of the NRF was speaking and he was thinking about how important innovation is, I thought about how important innovation is in also assisting us in addressing issues of poverty alleviation and unemployment in our country. And so you want to help people to get their innovations into the market as quickly as possible so that they can be agile, you know, economically. So sometimes a person just needs a one-hour session, and you've already helped them to better whatever innovation they had. Sometimes the person needs 6 months of support. So can we look at the different types of support that people need so that maybe the numbers are not 25 or 35, but they weigh more than that? And also maybe looking at the model we use or the approach we use with the IKX and the repositories or those centers, and then maybe saying, because I'm assuming TIA would be a crucial entity in rolling out that support, so could TIA maybe locate itself in many, I don't know, institutions of higher learning, but I don't want to say institutions of higher learning only because they in themselves are inaccessible. So how do we create spaces like that? Maybe working with the municipality, and within the municipality there's a desk that citizens know that if I go there, there is a segment that can support me with whatever innovation that I have, just so that the innovation is refined to be ready for the market. And markets vary. The market could be the local community. The market could be the world. But I think we I don't know, just clarity on that. And then I really am excited, of course, about we welcome the new board of NACI. And I just need clarity, and I've asked this question before, but I just need help again, you know, with this issue of Dr. Pelle acting forever and ever. And I don't know if that's captured under the commitment to stabilize the secretariat. And I mean, if we're saying we're improving legislation and mandates and functions, I can't remember what the explanation was around your acting, Dr. Pelle, but if we are already working on the mandate of the organization, but we aren't even able to resolve an offer, it's just making me, I'm a bit confused, and I need help. Please help me on that one. There's a cross-cutting issue of investment in research and development that all entities have spoken about so far. And I think this led me to another question where there was an appreciation by yourself, Mr. Moafe, of, I guess, synergy, right, in terms of how your entities... So I guess the concern I have is duplication versus doubling the efforts. So how do we make sure that we're not duplicating certain functions, mandates, or tasks vis-a-vis knowing that we're doubling efforts? If that makes sense. So there are certain things that everyone must do so that there's a collective pull or push towards achieving this, but we must be able to be clear about who's responsible for this. So that differentiation between duplication of certain tasks vis-a-vis doubling the effort as a collective. And I want to appreciate as well that NACI, I think, tried to speak about what the plan is on dealing with the issue of research and development, and us not only saying it's a problem, but what are we doing about it, and of course the whole continental approach as well. And just maybe for colleagues, it might not be a now issue, but even when we say that we want private sector to come on board, the same concerns we have about international donors and them dictating what we ought to do should also be a concern we have about private sector dictating, you know, what type of research we should be producing. And so whilst we need their support, we just need to always take into consideration, you know, those politics, because it is a political matter. And then when we look into, you know, the role or the interface, and this speaks to the higher education, science, technology, and innovation landscape, the interface between the role of DSI in the establishment of these institutions of science and innovation and the role that higher education plays in that relationship, let's also look into ensuring that when we benchmark the type of institutions we want, we look into the African continent as well and don't only look into Europe or, you know, wherever else. I mean, I think there is a science and technology university in Malawi, and it would be good to see what strengths they have, but also to learn from their weaknesses so that we don't commit similar, you know, mistakes. Colleagues, we note this ongoing concern on budget, and I'm glad that CEO of NRF spoke to the committee's commitment in trying to advocate for an increased budget for the National System of Innovation. But I also want to say another way in which we can deal with funds that are not increasing is by strengthening budget coordination across other departments and ensuring that we push, you know, it's almost like a propaganda. Like, you know, you might hear me, and, you know, my colleagues from the party I am deployed from would know that even in our party spaces, we try and tell our colleagues what innovations are in science that can help them. You know, we try so hard to say, hey, you know, DSI has 1, 2, 3. It can help you in your municipality. It can help you in your department. So we are trying in various ways to lobby. It is lobbying. So that we can take those resources that they have to make sure that the work we are trying to do finds expression. And then lastly on the NRF, again, of course, welcoming the new board and wishing you well. And we're really happy. I've heard lots of ums and lots of nodding from members when you spoke about the fact that you yourself as the new board have also gone through the plans and have taken ownership of those plans as well. And it's clear that the board supports the leadership of the entity, the management of the entity by being here. Through the round of applause that was led by yourself, Mamadis, and we I must say, when I walked out, as we were about to start, I quickly walked out to grab coffee, and as I walked out, the chair of the Audit and Risk Committee was like, you know, questioned I was starting, but very impatiently, almost like, and I thought to myself, oh, I know who is Galanini, you got you. But I'm glad that the chairperson of the Audit and Risk Committee is such a stern person, because we are put into confidence as a committee that we have, you know, sound people who lead that very important task. So we wish you all well as the board of the entity. And I think I'll leave it at that. I am concerned personally, honourable members, by the fact that we don't have increased budgets for funding, to fund postgraduate students. The demand is ever increasing. It is part of the reasons why we see some of the protests we see in our institutions of higher learning. In fact, when you put it the way you did, Chair, it's shocking in terms of the fact that I think we're funding only 35% of, you know, those who do apply. And it confirms the narrative that students have. I think when we were at the University of Limpopo, Python of the North, I don't know what you mean, the SRC president, you know, he said he's the Python of the North, or something like that. He said very harshly, he said, what is this NRF? Don't tell us about NRF, we don't know NRF. He said, if you can ask any students here at the University of Limpopo, none of them will say they know this NRF. We just see adverts. And look, we understand now that, look, it actually isn't a budget, so it's not going to get there. If there are students at the University of Limpopo who are funded by the NRF, it's very few. So no one's going to steal this NRF. And so we ask this question as a committee, at the start of the sixth administration, what are we doing to coordinate budgets to fund postgraduate students? And I want to ask the NRF this again. Are we making any inroads in looking for, because on the one side we are imploring on NAFIS to administer all these scholarships and whatever, the bursaries that are all over the place. So, Nina, my thinking was that when we started in 2019, we were saying a similar thing to NRF, that go and look for all the scholarships and bursaries that everyone is handing out for postgraduate funding, and you administer it, and you be accountable for funding for postgraduate students using government resources. That was what I thought we were calling for, and how far are we with that? Is there buy-in? Do people want you to do that? Does legislation allow you to be the person who administers, or policy allow you to do that? If not, then we need to play our role as a committee in advocating for that particular change, of course, with the support of the department. Do you have a database, at least maybe, that you can say, if you reject a student, then you can say to the student, okay, we can't take you, we don't have capacity, but we know that such and such company or department has such budget, because also it then speaks to the attitude that young people will have towards the entity. So that even if they know the Hashem, but there's Nibayazama to redirect you towards who could possibly have funds. And so we are concerned about that, but we also need to see what kind of interventions we can put in place in the meantime. The National Astrotourism Strategy, and apparently we're building the SKA Science Center for this year, 2023. I think we would just like to have, you know, like a breakdown of those plans so that we're able to hold you accountable in that regard. And also maybe it's something we are interested in, because we have been in the space, we know the space, we know what is possible, but we also want to lobby the Portfolio Committee on Tourism to make sure that they come on board and support. So we need to know where exactly our lobbying must be postured so that that can come to fruition. I think it's a very important tool in terms of alleviating the economic pressures of our country, particularly in rural communities. Outcome 6 speaks about developmental state and daily weather bulletins and warnings. And of course, I was part of that launch of the Space Weather Center. But I know, I mean, looking at the floods that we've had as a country, there is great concern around the impact of our remote sensing or Earth observation in terms of our risk management as a country. And are we intentionally planning, strengthening relations or coordination between ourselves who are doing the Earth observation and the remote sensing and those who must ready themselves for the action they must take on the ground? Are we planning, do we have that as part of our plan? Because I know we speak about strengthening, there's other players, we want bulletins and stuff, but is the bulletin going to strengthen ensuring that those who must act on the ground do so that we don't feel like we are wasting funds in terms of the work we are doing around the remote sensing? I don't understand the numbers around black emerging farmers. 2020-2021, we, I think, were able to achieve 71. And then 2021-2022, it was 843. I can't see my own handwriting. And then 2022-2023, it goes down again to 300. And then I think it's for the rest of the year, 300, then 500 at some point. I don't understand those numbers. If Khalees can help me understand that. That's it for myself. Honorable
Portion. Thank you, Honorable Chair, and my apology for missing the first presentation because I only had to could arrive this morning, and flights between Kimberley and Cape Town are not all that many. If we look at DSI, I get the idea, well, it's not an idea, it's a fact, that the budget of DSI is less than many other departments, but the entities which have to be managed within the department are many more than in other departments. Even if one just looks at the NRF, it seems like a whole department on its own with entities within that, which makes it quite difficult to coordinate. In terms of NACI, I just want to refer to a few things that I made notes on. If you advise on, I want to know, is it correct to say that NACI is a kind of an internal oversight mechanism? Something in that sense. In other words, doing what we as a portfolio committee should also be doing, but the advantage of NACI is maybe your party leader doesn't stop liking you and then remove you and put somebody else who doesn't know what's going on in your place, giving a little bit more continuity than we might have in the committee. I just want to ask that to get an idea on your job. And with that, you showed us an organogram. Is that the number of employees also? Say something like 10 or 12 employees, or are there more employees? I'm just trying to get the idea about the actual performance, how it works every day. If I look at the employee compensation, it doesn't seem to me as if it could be too many people working there, otherwise they don't work for too much. And I would like to know on international partnerships, is there a conscious alignment with the government's foreign policy, or is it on a kind of ad hoc basis? And then something else that I was wondering about, if you advise on science councils, I would really like you to advise the minister to take over on this support and maybe the Agricultural Research Council, because they do very fundamental and fundamentally important work, and without disadvantaging any colleagues, I don't think the Department of Agriculture is doing such a good job out of this, while especially on a support is very much similar to other projects that this department runs successfully, while at the same time on a support is being run to the ground. So it seems to me that is exactly the kind of advice that Naki could give the minister, and I don't know what the other minister would think about it, but maybe Naki could even advise her through the sharp minister, of course. And then referring to the National Research Foundation, I would like to know, not in exact numbers, but what is the experience of turnover of staff? Do we still have a problem of a fast turnover that one doesn't have, you know, time to get settled into your job before a better offer comes from somewhere, maybe in the private sector? I know that has been a problem presented previously. I wondered how it's still going along that lines. And then about the contracts that you mentioned, I would like to know the funding obtained through those contracts, do they fund more than the work itself? Or in other words, do we succeed, if that is success, I would think so, but some people would disagree, do we succeed to cross subsidize maybe some of the work that we have to do in any case, but we don't have the money to do that, but now we get another job with a few extra cents doing this also? Or is it strictly ring-fenced? This is a contract, the money is just used for this specific contract. And then maybe I would like to ask an opinion on HDIs, historically disadvantaged institutions. I recently read the book of Brooke Jonathan Janssen on the universities in South Africa, and everybody has his or her own angle on this whole problem, but what he actually says, if I could summarize it, is that the most important problem is not a lack of a capacity, it is priorities. That the academic project is not the center of initiative and thought and activities, but something else, something less lofty. And then you can build capacity, but that won't solve the problem, because capacity may be a problem, but that's not the actual problem, that's not the core of the problem. That's, if I understand his book correctly, and I would like to know if the NIF has as a task to assist HDIs to become first-rate institutions, how do you respond to that? And that actually everything, I left out something with Naki that I would just want to insert there again. That since we have computers, we can insert anything, anytime when we can think of it. If you mention an African research fund, what are the chances that such a good idea gets, bogged down at the point of whether the main office is going to be in Pretoria or in Lagos or in Dar es Salaam? Or do we have the requisite, let's say, momentum and flexibility from the scientific communities in the different role players to be able to really get this done? Thank you. I'm very much inclined to keep on speaking, because we don't have Honourable Letsie here, and I don't know how we are going to fill up the time. But I don't want to advantage him with that. He's very thorough and very interesting, and I enjoy listening to him. Just to be sure. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thanks, Captain. Greetings to everyone, and thanks for the presentation. NRF underfunded. The Captain has touched on it. I think something must be done. It is possible. They must get funded. I was not clear with the program, how does it work, the program, if you can elaborate more on it. And now he, acting CEO, until when? We must appoint that person a very full time. We And I like that they will involve the community at all times. And I think the chapter has said the cross-cutting issues could work in our entities. That is, all of you are going to work with the communities. DSI will work hand in hand with local government. How are you going to make sure that all these programs are being implemented to local government? Yo, because we are fighting for positions, except in Damba Maumo. They are not talking about programs, only in the Duluji. Yo, except King Emin Duluji, we are Buga. How are you going to make sure that they implement this program? I think the chairperson has... Oh, the issue of Saba, EA one-stop shop, if you can elaborate more on it. That's the chairperson.
Good morning, everyone, and also from my side, welcome. I welcome the presentations. It's always very... how would I say, a good learning experience to listen to the entities of DFI and DFI themselves. I also would like to congratulate the new boards from Mackie and from the NRF. I do know we will have fruitful engagements going forward. So when you listen to everything, so I'm not going to specifically talk, I'm just going to give my view, what I heard. So basically, if you listen to all the departments, they are specifically worried about the skills outflux in the country, because we do get people that might have the requisite skills, but because of the funding shortfall of the various entities, they cannot attract those requisite skills. Hence, you will find that there's this kind of deficit that then unfolds and has been going on. Since I've been in the science and technology portfolio, there's always been the recurring message that is brought across. Also, capacity, the relevancy of the various departments, and obviously then the major one, financial constraints. So when we look at the financial constraints and we look at the grants that is decreasing and the GDP is not actually getting to 1.1%, as it should have been by now. Have there ever been consideration given to rationalize some of these entities into one? Because of the overlapping responsibilities or roles that can exist. Because if you listen to most of what has been said of the current ones, to me there is a sense where some of these entities should have long ago being roped into as one entity instead of being separate entities, which would free up some of the funding available to be used more effectively. That is one observation that I've got. Then if you also consider when we look at, you guys are talking about, which interested me because I'm from the Eastern Cape, about the 10 IKS smart villages in Nyandeni. I hope you've been to Nyandeni and you see how isolated that place is. Well, I'm saying specifically that there was a science center built in Koffenvaal. No? It is actually a white elephant if you go there. It's not really being used. It's been used for meeting for union members. I've just recently been there before I came to this committee because it is part of my constituency. So you spend so much money on that science center in a remote area to bring in social awareness and for people to update the sciences. But how have we looked at actually ensuring that they are operational in the school itself? Because some of the schools are not using it. Teachers are not capacitated enough to teach math and science at that level in those areas. We have a situation. And I know you guys, NACI has really been active. I've heard about NACI giving assistance to the Department of Basic Education and Curriculum Development. I think you recently, we were on a webinar where you guys were talking about math and how to develop it in the schools, which I found very interesting. But that is where our main concern would be in the long term, that if we can't fix the system on a basic schooling level, you will, at the end of the day, not even have proper skills coming into the higher education sphere. So on the NACI side, in order to address all the various departments which everyone's involved in science and research and innovation development, has there ever been consideration given, I think I sound like a broken record when I say this one, that NACI should actually be located as a standalone, which I was grateful of hearing, standalone entity, but in the president's office, to be as the advisor to where it actually should be in the cabinet. Because you will find various departments speaking in silos to each other, not knowing the various research that's going on, and then you guys are actually looked upon to pick up the pieces that was messed up in the other departments. So that would be a good thing for me to see. Also, when I hear, as you would read most of the stuff that was said, it said that you are looking at incorporating all the ideas mostly in the white paper and the decadal plan. I would love to have seen from each of them specifically which aspects of the white paper, especially not the white paper, the decadal plan, you were planning to actually strengthen your entity with. That would have been opening up more discussion for us, just to have a generalized statement from each entity saying exactly the same thing. Now, I do understand you guys have been talking to on the district development model, you have been talking to local governments, which I found remarkable of the work that you are doing in the local government sphere. But I just recently had a meeting with Agreement SA on the new innovative building techniques that they have there. And the one thing that came to them, my awareness when they spoke, was that somehow local governments are not easy to take on innovative programs. So I would like to know, is there any memorandums of understanding on how to implement innovative techniques within the various local governments, because they are very slow on the uptake of the innovative research initiatives that you guys might have. I think we saw it recently in Nelson Mandela Bay with the water issue, when I asked a simple question, has any of the universities even been contacted doing this research, and they said no. So I found that I could ask a parliamentary question. You have Nelson Mandela University and you couldn't even engage them to actually ensure that this is taking place. So that is also what we need to consider. Then with the tax incentives, I would have loved to have seen how many in the previous financial year and going forward, how many of the businesses actually were making use of the tax incentives for innovation and entrepreneurship and assisting younger, new entrepreneurs in the tech sector, if they had taken that initiative to ensure that they actually are compensated on the tax basis for their efforts going forward. And lastly, Chairperson, we are talking to the department, which I basically feel should have been the most instrumental when it comes to the biggest challenge we have in the country, load shedding. I'm even too scared to ask how it affects you, because I might find it, as I was at Home Affairs yesterday, not Home Affairs, Department of Labor, that they don't even have generators when it's load shedding, so they can't be of any help to anyone. So I would have liked to have seen your real impact. What advice was given during this time period to the cabinet with regard to how to resolve the load shedding issue? I know you talk about the hydrogen cell technology, but I'm getting the sense that this misjunction between the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy with the Department of Science and Innovation, especially NACI, giving the advice on how to sort out an issue that is potentially crippling our economy, given that we have the one of the best entities sitting in, not entities, partners with these entities sitting in front of us. So that is just something I would love to know, how the minister will tackle within this time period to avoid the stage 8 getting on our doorstep. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon to everyone. And also I would like to take the opportunity to thank all those who have made presentations for the, you know, providing us with the presentation. Although I think there were some errors as well that I was able to pick up, but anyway, that's still separate, of course, anyway. I just want to find out, you know, like there was, I think DSI spoke about the vaccine, you know, the vaccine production. And there was also, you know, a feeling that we need to have a more coherent national strategy when it comes to science. Is there a way that we could actually, you know, kind of prioritize research on vaccines? Because if we're already, you know, doing that good kind of work, is it possible that we can maybe expand on that? Because, you know, the opportunities that can come out of that, specifically on clinical trials, and production and manufacturing of vaccines. So how are we, you know, how are we advocating to ensure that we expand that more so that we can deal with the issues of unemployment that we currently have? I also want to say, you know, ever since I've been in this department, even before I got to the Department of Science and Innovation, the issue of funding has always been the biggest issue. And it doesn't look like we're getting anywhere with that, you know, to say that we need more funding and because the money just not coming in, instead we're seeing a reduction of funds that are coming in into science and innovation. Despite the fact that, you know, we all agree that I think that's our best way of dealing with our triple challenges, but it clearly is not working. But I want to find out, you know, Nancy was saying that you actually advise the minister on various issues. And I think Honorable Chantal King has just mentioned that you're taking on maths and natural science and technology on that. And us as well, they're also doing their work. When we went to Northern Cape, they also, you know, were assisting a school around Northern Cape with maths and science. But I think that we can actually take it further because I think that's the only way that we can be able to have the tools that we need. Because what we need is to make sure that our youth, they do eventually, you know, study maths and science. And currently, NSFAS is providing, I don't know how many billions to NSFAS for students at university. And the majority of those universities, they are not studying science and mathematics. Just not in those fields. And those are fields that can actually, you know, eventually get them into employment. And I feel like, you know, maybe we're not making enough effort to assist basic education because clearly they are not, you know, doing their part. And this department has people with science. I'm sure, like, you know, everyone here with a science background, with math, and you understand what the potential and what is the change that you can bring into a family, for instance. When you have a child that has that is studying maths and science at university. So I don't know, for me, I would say that why don't we sort of like from the department come up with a virtual school. A virtual school, not to really, you know, to look at all the subjects, but basically to look at maths and science. It doesn't have to be, you know, like somebody that comes and goes to each and every school. But to kind of have a portal that the students can go to and be assisted with maths and science. Because our help is not going to come from the government. The current government is not, it's just not. There's no money. It's like every time we say we want money, it's like you're asking your domestic worker mother to fund you to buy an iPad. Or, you know, because it's going to help you. You know that. She knows that. But she just doesn't have money to do that. So I don't know if can we actually look at other ways of, instead of saying we need money, but how do we utilize what we have to assist basic education in the maths and science? Because I think that's
the only way that you can actually do that. Because if you have studied math and science and you've passed matric, maybe there's no university for you. But there are universities abroad. There are so many universities. We talk about BRICS. There are so many universities that BRICS are offering to our students to go and study there. So if you have good subjects, if you have good grades, then you have an opportunity. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to stay in the country to do that and achieve that. You can always get opportunities abroad. And many families, they do survive and, you know, live out of remittances in different countries whereby, you know, once you study, you go work there and then you bring money over. Okay, with that, I just want to get into my questions. I think it was a little bit long, but I thought maybe it's something that I need to emphasize on. I just want to find out, my question is, of the research work that is conducted by our institution, including CSIR, I know you're going to have your presentation, but I just want to find out of the work that, how much work that has resulted into intellectual property in the last 5 years? Of those of intellectual property, how many have resulted in job opportunities? And how many jobs have been created in the last 5 years? And how many IPs are filed, you know, that are collecting dust that are not utilized for the benefit of South Africans? Which IPs can be used to benefit South African in the interim for things like infrastructure, housing, roads, energy, but are not currently utilized for the purpose that they are researched for? How much has the department spent in the last 5 years on IP which is not utilized for the benefit of South Africans? Which IPs have been sold to international companies and have not benefited South Africans? And how much were they sold for? And what were the spin-off company? What were the spin-off companies that resulted into that IP? And how many jobs have been, created internationally and also within the country? And how many spin-off companies have been emitted from these IPs? I know it's a lot. I'm not expecting you to be able to answer this today. I've also decided to also submit them as questions. The National Council on Innovation is, as I said, like, you know, the advice. I wanted to find out, like, you know, if there's the NACI currently, what advice have you given to the minister? And in the last 5 years, you know, so it's not that NACI is just because we've got a new board, just want to welcome the new board and say congratulations. But I just want to find out in the last 5 years, the type of, it's one thing to come here and say, oh, we are going to advise the minister on this and that. But what have you been doing the last 5 years? Have you actually really given advice? Was he able to take the advice that you've given him? And which advice did you give him? Specifically on math and natural science and technology. That is my, you know, always my interest. And also, you know, last time I think the chairperson mentioned in Limpopo, but I think also in UNIVEN. When we went to UNIVEN, we discovered that there's a lot of research, good work that has been done in UNIVEN. We're also amazed because UNIVEN has got its own problems. But it is. One thing that they mentioned also was that, you know, they are not receiving money from the NRF despite the work that they are doing. I just want to find out, and they said, you know, I think that's something that was also confirmed today, that you look at the five best universities that we have in the country, and those are the ones that are funded. But I would like to find out that, like, you know, you say you don't fund because the university's got its own problems of administration. Yes, there's good work that has been, you know, done and produced within other particular universities, specifically in UNIVEN. So how do you determine, do you just go like VET? Oh, we know VET has got, you know, its ranking so much, and therefore is ranking this internationally, therefore they have to get so much. Or do you actually look at the type of research that's been done? And, you know, because they're doing good research. They're doing research in COVID. They're also doing research in TB. And I think there are many other universities that are doing that. How do you, when you fund NRF, do you say COVID is our priority, therefore UNIVEN is going to be included in the funding? Because VET is doing COVID and the University of Natal is doing this, so therefore we also feel like we have to do, give to that. Or do you just say, let's go for the best five universities and fund them? So I would just like to find out from them. Thank you so much. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon to all the representatives of the department and the entities listed. Good afternoon to all my other colleagues already. I will also join everybody who said thank you for the presentations that have been forwarded to us. I have quite a number of questions, so I'm going to ask your patience and request that you truly do answer all of them, please. And for those that require Chairperson much more meat and responses, I'm happy to receive them in writing. The first batch of questions will be directed to DFI. The first one has to do with the FONA commitment again. I think Honourable King touched on this, on the electricity. So there are quite a number of things that I need us to break down there. One, how far are we on the work that is being done on the just energy transition? Because you say you're doing work, but how far are we? What is work? What do we know? Two, what plans do you have to keep life on at institutions of higher learning in particular? So part of the plans that you would be working on would be keeping the life on for the country, but specifically within institutions of higher learning across board, within the sector, what are we doing there? And then again, I would like to have a bit more of a breakdown on what you mean by your fossil-based initiatives. I heard the leader of the delegation talking about the focus on coal as the primary champion for our issues that are faced, our electricity or energy issues. And I just want to have a better understanding there, because I would imagine that given that coal is a problematic thing altogether to use as the primary solution for coal for a number of reasons, and I'm going to list them now, given that one, 5,000 South Africans die every year of air pollution-related diseases and terminal and thermal coal power that are caused by thermal coal power plants, you would want to have other more initiatives that are much more attractive other than coal. And then secondly, given that the entire coal value chain is mildly captured, there's a cartel there that's very difficult to infiltrate. Well, thank you. Yeah. South Africa, our land. So, I mean, the cartels there, and it's very difficult to infiltrate that space. The sound foundationally underpins what makes South Africa a gangster state, one may argue. So the other thing that we have to look at is the environmental pollution from coal mining and coal power plants. So I could go on. There are a range of issues that are out there that you guys know. So one would ideally think that you would look at working at solutions that would attract more competition, that would deal with issues of trade tariffs that aren't limited on coal. So I would also that I'm cheaper as well, such as solar and wind. So I'm just a bit confused there as to why you would want to use coal as your primary champion idea to solve the energy crisis. So I would appreciate a better breakdown there. And I was also, on the same case, would like to know what the relationship between the department, the newly created Department of Electricity, the Ministry of Electricity, and the Energy Ministry looked like, and how far have your engagements been with those two ministries and your currently primary responding to Ministry of Higher Education, Science and Innovation. What does that relationship look like? Are you of the opinion that some of the thoughts and ideas that you have find expression, they don't, or what limitations do you have? And then the other thing that I want to ask to DSI has to do with your priority three on education, skills, and health, specifically with the expansion of access to post-school education and training opportunities. What are you doing? So what when you say you are working and this is your priority and you're working at on your expansion to access to tertiary education, what does that look like? Are you saying maybe you're working on a and I think the chairperson would know, a favorite of mine, digitizing tertiary education, which is I think would be very beneficial moving forward, given that we're lagging behind as a sector in terms of our industrial revolution placement currently, or something. What does it look like? If we can give the committee confidence on what that looks like, that would be great. The other thing again, yeah, so when you are saying you are working on innovative tech solutions in particular to deal with service delivery, what is that? What is innovative tech solutions? If you can say clarity, that's what I'm trying to get, so that we're not just dealing with surface level engagements on the kind of work that the department is doing. And then on your finances, on your allocations made per program, I need to know why. I just also need to go through, give me a second, I just need to open that in front of me right now so that I'm able there's a clear, everybody is on the same agreement that money is a problem, you're not getting money at home. But when you are given a motivation on why there is a regression in funding payers, are you able to give an answer to say that what is it? Is it the money is no longer being generated? Where I'm trying to simplify this in a way that makes sense. So obviously you yourself ask to say, but this is the money that we need, this is what we request, but this is what we get. Mm-hmm. When you ask why is it that there is a mismatch between your request and what you get, what answer do you get? I would like to know that answer just for my own knowledge keeping. And it would also make sense of, help us, I think, as a committee, make sense of a number of things. And I would also like a specification on your infrastructure projects. There are no timeline specifications or allocations on which, at what point do you intend to finish which infrastructure project, so that we are also able to conduct oversight as a committee to know that it's not just the case of you having an infrastructure project, but we don't know which project is being administered by which contractor and at which time of which month do you anticipate to be done. So that specification would be great. Chairperson, I'm now moving to the NAGI. NAGI, what I would like to know, the first question that I would like to pose to you is, what are the proposed amendments to the entity's legislative functions that you've been talking about? So you said that they are proposed, but what are those proposals? What are you going to, what are those amendments? What do they look like? Secondly, are there any advisories or policies that were provided, and I think the Honourable Matisse also touched a bit on that were provided to both the tertiary and basic education ministry since 1997. Together you've been, and this is the one that has to come to me in writing, one of them. So you've existed since 1997, you've done a whole lot of work, you've given a whole lot of advice. So are there any of them that were not accepted or not implemented? If so, what are they? I think it would help for me, as I think Chairperson touched on this, to say even in her own caucus, she tries to say, but these are the things that you could be doing. In order for us to be able to have a greater advocacy in this, as a committee, we need to know to say that, oh, but in 2007, there was a solution to XYZ. It was not accepted that we were able to go back. So if you can have a list of all of those failed missions, I would call them, that would be great. And the reasons supporting the failed missions given to you from whatever ministry. The third one, I would need more information on the Africa wide business engagement, that fund, that idea that you have, that's great. How far are we on that initiative? Again, this is I think you will all now catch up that most of my questions, I just need you to be clearer. Give me more information so that I can understand. So how far are we on those outcomes, and what are our end goals and dates for the same initiative? Get that breakdown. The fourth thing, again, still not key. The recruitment of new people within your space. So how are you going about it? Because you said that there's still a need for more people to come into the space, to have more capacity and more and greater minds to join the team. So what limitations do you have, apart from your budgetary constraints, obviously, to say that you can only recruit so many people and pay them? Do you have any other limitations that you haven't exposed that you think the committee would need to know about the sourcing market that you are working with? The other one is on, so when do you plan to finalize the establishment of the new NACI? So you have a new NACI that you're thinking on. When do you plan to finalize it? And how will the entity's organogram change? You touched on it just a bit to say there will be a change, but what does that change look like, ideally? I'll just skip that one. The other one, what would your, if you were to draw up an ideal dream list of needs to develop a coherent strategy on the development of policies or outcomes on artificial intelligence, what would that dream list look like? If you were to give us that, to say a wish list, if I were to give this to, what is Cinderella's fairy godmother? If you were to give this to the fairy godmother, what would that list look like for you, ideally? And I think you understand why I'm asking that. I'm moving on, Chairperson, to the NRF now. NRF, again, congratulations to the new board. So I would need your a bit more clarity, a better breakdown on your funding gap, the funding gap policy that you were working on for researchers. Share what are the proposals there? What does that gap policy strategy that you have look like? What does it have? What have you proposed? What do we need? Can get clarity on that, or we can have that policy proposal in documentation submitted. Secondly, what does the culture improvement plan look like? Because you mentioned that you have a culture improvement plan, but what is a culture improvement plan? What is, give us the plan. This is the plan and this is what you're going to implement so that we know what we're talking about. And then your program one indicators, your projected, you are estimating to increase your performance just by 3%. And as an entity that I think you said as the presenter that you pride yourself in high performance, and that's a culture that's a norm within. So why is it that you're just thinking about 3%? Because, and the logic behind this is this. So the higher you aim, the less you fall. So if you are going to set a target to grow your performance, then you obviously move up your target so that should you obviously fall below that target, you still reach it within a margin that is still greater than the anticipation. So that's just the logic I want to know behind why did you think that's like that. So the other one, the fourth question is, so what new programs do you have that fall under the STI executive plan? Yeah, in the financial year. So you said that you have programs that you're going to be working on within this financial year that form part of the executive plan, but what are those programs? Clarity again, more meat to your presentation. And then of those plans, which ones are you revising? Which ones are you looking at so that we know when we conduct oversight and assessment on your plans? You said this one in particular, this is the one that we're reviewing so that we're able to track it. And then what are the outcomes of the two of the other previous years on the review and the development of new programs? What do those outcomes look like? The last question, Chairperson, is on what? So you said that you have a center, the beautiful center that does all the work, that the research work. But what have we learned about the treatment of cancer in particular? The research on cancer in particular, what groundbreaking discoveries have you made in this country that are different from knowledge that exists out there from other nations that helps us, brings us closer to the idea? So yeah, so that's where I'm at. I think I've covered everything that I needed. Chair, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by welcoming all the presentations and as well indicate that I have noted that in all the presentations and three entities, there's alignment of the digital plan. So it's one thing that one knows. As the person who's been consistent for 4 years engaging with the department and entities to say at least everything that we advise on, you are able to implement without hesitation. So Chair, you can note that all of us here as politicians, we are on the mood of elections. When you hear Honorable Boshoff speaking about the sharp blade, you know of that there's something that is not happening correctly. So would you pardon us as we get on that particular step? We are towards 2024. So victory is certain for some of us. Let me get to what I wanted to say with regards to three presentations. I'm happy that as this particular portfolio committee, we've been consistent about transformation. And at least on DSI, we were able to get issues that we said, we hear you talking about black, you're talking about women, but you don't talk about youth and disability. And today the presentation at least indicates here in terms of what is the plan towards including those who have been excluded. And as well, with regards to NRF, I have noted that they have omitted the issue of specifically telling us about the youth beneficiaries on that slide where they speak about women and black beneficiaries. We didn't have a specific on issues of how many are young people who are benefiting besides the issue of graduates. And I think, Chairperson, it's worrisome that at this time, again, when we get to this particular plan, we don't see, you know, big specific numbers per policies in terms of women and as well as youth and people with disability. So my advice to you with regards to that particular transformational agenda space is let us align ourselves with all developmental policies that speak with specific quotas and commit based on the specific quotas, because you don't need to actually have your own policy to say as DSI, this is what are we going to do for youth and this is a specific number. There's a policy that guides them, that is youth development policy. So I want to say to all of you, in terms of issues of inclusion of marginalized, vulnerables and those who are destitute, make sure that you use policies that are already available. I'm happy that Chairperson, all the presentations, they speak more about HDI developments, and it's something that us on the side, it's one of the things that we've been pushing for as the agenda to say, you can't be speaking about DSI and entities with specific class or levels. We need to bring everybody along, and in all this presentation, Honorable Khaw, we are able to see that at least there's something that has been done in terms of the shift. Issues of responding to societal benefits, I'm very happy that there's inclusion of rural parts of the country, and some are being prioritized and as part and parcel of the development. The issue of public-private partnership is very interesting on how everybody's in charge as executive and say, at least now we're going to lobby industry to say, come in and do 1, 2, 3. And it is something that most of us, when we are in public, Honorable McKenzie, we we stay away from the fact that we need private sector to assist government. Most of the people, they like actually misinterpreting the president when you say government is creating an enabling environment. They say, oh, this person doesn't want to do anything as the president. But he is saying that on the basis that he wants all of you here who are employed to ensure that you drive this development, you are able to bring those that we cannot speak openly with or about. So I'm very happy, Chair, in terms of how the department and NTC are saying we need to bring along the industries to assist us where we see that there's a gap. Issues of public-private partnership, Chairperson, you will always speak about here to say it is important that they come on board. And as the portfolio committee, one of the things that I once prided myself with is the issue of us leading or championing cost-cutting issues and mainstreaming issues. So perhaps the department can, and all entities and those who will be coming to present, it is important that in future, indicate to us to say, these are the specific department internally, nationally that we are working with. And this is the status quo in terms of what we could have submitted to them for them to assist us. Because there are MOU that are not being signed somewhere, give us those details so that as we speak with other departmental, sister departments, we are able to say, but in terms of issue of energy transition, Minister of Electricity must go there. And this is what DSI is waiting for. So we are able to do our job as members of parliament. So I just want to say it is important for us to have that particular specific template that would indicate what are the issues internally on all our national government. However, we must not shy away, Honorable King, that this is one of the department and entities that are consistent in terms of audit outcomes. And that in here, from a layman person, it says that these are people who are actually good in terms of ensuring that they apply or comply to audit standards. And issues of good governance are one of the things that they pride themselves with. So we need to actually applaud them for being consistent, and we hope those who are new, they would keep on doing what have been done as a practice in this particular entities. The other thing that I'm happy about, Chairperson, that we know, actually, with my work experience previously, this thing of handover, people taking trace from those who came before, most of the department or entities, they don't do it. But here we've got people who are saying that we've gone through previous reports and we have identified 1, 2, 3 and 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. So that thing is acknowledged and it's appreciated that you understand that you are not starting from a new book. You are continuing from those we have left. So we would want to say to yourselves, don't repeat what has been done wrongly by those. Start a new chapter. Where you need to start a new chapter, start a new chapter. Don't start a new book. Just a chapter. Because already you get there's a wheel that is moving. Chair, with that being said, let me just go directly on my questions, but it's you from DSI. I just want to get sense in terms of what does the department currently have as unfunded mandates. And again, with DSI, does the department have any unfunded initiatives or initiatives that will be addressed during budget adjustment processes? This is for DSI, and I'm happy that other issues have been responded to. The issues of CEO just need to be dealt with, because most of the members, they are saying that it's about time that we stay away, or we deal with the issue of what you call it, it's the zero backlog or zero practice of 18 what. In this portfolio committee, we actually saying that we must do away with that if we would want to take the country forward. I'm happy that one of the presenters of NRSF said that if you would want to create a better South Africa, you need to actually prioritize science, innovation and technology. But you cannot do that if you don't take everybody along to say, why do we need such and such budget in this particular space? So for the NRF, my question is with regards to foreign income derived from the activities of the national facilities increases from 162 million to 234 million. What factors influences this particular increase? And the other issue is with regards to the slide 25 where you say that the NRF is underfunded based on demand and fundable proposals that remain unfunded. Which proposals remain unfunded? Because I had the CEO when he was actually presenting here, he said he doesn't want to be a politician, but I just want clarity with regards to that. What mitigation actions are currently being pursued to respond to the key risk faced by the NRF? Now, Chair, let me come to NECI. Within its current structure and placement, what has been the key obstacle hampering NECI mandates, and why has NECI not had, or the issue of the CEO as well has been touched on with regards to NECI? Lastly, Chair, what progress can be reported in relation to each of these particular tasks that they have actually presented on slide 14? I think this is one of the things that Honorable Mackenzie has touched on to say, let them give us a little bit of background or synopsis. So I would like just to say to yourselves, keep on keeping on and make sure that we create a better country that we want to see to all entities. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me welcome the presentation I was lucky enough to catch. Although I have acquainted myself with the DSI presentation and would want to speak on it as well. So Honorable Boshoff, you know in soccer,
no?
In soccer,
yeah.
There are super subs. So Lydia is not here.
So you are the impact player.
But however, I will not take as much time as he would, hopefully. I want to say, to headline my input with the following comments, Chair, that the basic pursuit of this democratic government, and I think since its first election, has been to ensure that there is greater redress, there's a greater equitable distribution of the wealth of this country amongst those who live in it. There is a greater improvement to access to services. As you would know that certain racial groupings did not have access to services. I consistently hear people argue on social networks that no, the apartheid government was better. I grew up in a township with no roads. People who say they come from Soweto, they say we come from the dusty streets of Soweto. Many of them parts of it. And we grew up without electricity. I grew up with Welcome Dover. Those who would know the coal stove. In fact, it was part of a song by Mbongeni Ngema. Welcome Dover, baby. Stones are fine. And it has been a long journey. Those who say that the apartheid state provided better services are fooling no one but themselves. the journey that we have traversed from 1994 to date is testament of the resilience of the type of people we are. We still have a long way to go in as far as ensuring that Project South Africa becomes a resounding success. And we still have a long way to go before we break down the paradigm, the racial paradigms, that when you walk in a room, you notice people come. It's going to come. When people walk in a room and they just see people. And it's going to be a national project that all of us must pursue. It is unfortunate that those who would have become beneficiaries of a diabolic system would want to keep the status quo. Because of course, the benefits are telling. Who would want to let go of benefits, really? But we must make the case in a conversation that if you keep holding on and you do not become a partner to the nation building project, one day the poor will eat the rich. I think there's a famous quotation by a French revolutionary philosopher. It says, when the people go hungry, they will eat the rich. When they run out of anything to eat. And it is for everyone's benefit that we transform our country, the economy, and the general outlook of South Africa. And I say these comments because the DSI as a department is not a layman's department. A layman may not easily interact with the DSI because of all the high-level knowledge that is proliferated in this space. Peer reviews, research, terminologies, acronyms, and scientists are big proponents of acronyms. The first things we see when we read your presentations are acronyms. And because you understand it, you suppose that everyone else, by natural or organic predisposition, understands. And so it is important to disambiguate the science world, make it accessible to the layman. Because of the 61 million South Africans, you have seen the numbers, Prof. Nevermore. You are our churning oven of higher qualifications in relation to funding. The numbers tell you, in reference to the 61 million, it's a small sector of society which can grapple with the high level knowledge that circulates in the sector. Now, you could argue that you are dealing with the top 5% really in knowledge production, in the knowledge production context. Bring it down to the layman. Make it accessible. I'm worried with the hydrogen project check that it's going to end up being an elitist project. Very elitist. High capital acquisition from top investors in the world. Monopolies are going to put a stranglehold on this thing. And that is not what we are about. I am yet to see a disaggregated presentation that speaks to how this newly found gold industry, literally, is going to be accessible to the ordinary Joe on the streets without incredibly high barriers of entry. I read this presentation from the DSI on the hydrogen technology, and the first thing that comes to my mind is, you are not going to get a table from Orlando or Harangu or Winterfeld participating in this thing, unless of course he has connections. South Africa has become a country of connections. Yes, the phenomenon is global, but you need to start thinking at the DSI how to make these new technologies that we are championing and down accessible commercially, economically, to a young boy in Tofimba, where Honorable King was, without him needing to have connections. All right, I speak from a point of privilege, one, because I'm a member of parliament, but two, I also speak from a point of experience, because I'm a member of the African National Congress. Our party, more than all others, is always impugned with the tag of corruption. One of the most famous tags, sub-tags, is nepotism. The second one is creolism. And basically, when we unpack it, it's people needing connections to succeed. There is everything wrong with the bureaucracy that creates high barriers of entry when we are trying to develop this state into one, a capable one, to a developmental state. And so these high-level projects that we read about, hydrogen, ISO, BioVac. BioVac was snapped by the Department of Health. BioVac. Government snubs government because the pursuit is to save rands and cents, and not necessarily the developmental agenda. We must define our priorities. And I always say, Chair, that our problems in the main are not problems of resources and the absence of capacity. It is the problems of the absence of leadership. Those who are given the power to lead do not do so. They do not even qualify to occupy those positions. Year in, year out, people return money to the national treasury. DSI is one of very, 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 very few that doesn't. Is it a question of constraint resources given to the department? Possibly. But my personal observation is that there is capable leadership over the institution. And this is why we are seeing what we are seeing. I would want to, in reference to the human resource structure, how many posts remain unfilled? And what is the plan to fill them? How long have they been vacant? And how well are those who are juggling three posts in one doing? Mentally, health-wise, are they fine? If a person does three jobs alone, they are not going to be fine. This is why we now see the prevalence of stroke incidents in workplaces. People collapse on their desks. Heart attacks arise. It's because the workplace
of government has become a death trap. We leave posts open for too long. We overburden those who occupy certain posts with too much responsibility. They underperform and we suspend them. This information is critical for us to make an analysis of why we would not have optimal performance in certain spaces in the department. So the organogram, the organizational structure, vacant positions, and if there are positions that are really not necessary, why keep them on the structure? And there is a tendency also to keep funded posts open without advertising. Funded. One financial year after another. I would want to understand what informs that phenomenon. I would have wished,
and I want to speak on the NRS. Oh, before I go to the NRS, I want to understand why is there a drop in the MTEF for subsequent years after 2023 and 2024. I would have supposed that we need to pump more resources into science and innovation, but I see there's a notable drop between 2024, 2025 and 2026. The drop also reflects in the allocations that are made through subsidies and transfers and subsidies. I would want to understand where that comes from and what the logic is. I would be supposing I would suppose that the department would come to the portfolio committee and fight for a budget. We would much rather say no, but you are too high, considering everything else. Let's rather take you a notch low. You voluntarily, perhaps there is an explanation to the voluntary drop from 2023-24 and the two outer years. Now, I want to speak to the NRF. Upfront, I want to say we are very proud of the work that the NRF is doing. We would want to see it do more. Because they are the midwifery of knowledge production. The contest of that space internationally. What initiatives are there to not only contribute to the space sector, but also perhaps to the energy sector? Years ago, Prof. Nelamondo, there used to be a very interesting project that was the baby of NECFA. It used to be called the Pebble Bed Modular Reactor Project. Now, you may wonder what triggered the memory of that project. It is the radioisotopes project that you are successfully championing. Now, I know the chairperson of the board is probably thinking, here we go. It would have been an interesting partnership to observe, because the explanation that was given at the collapse of the technology, the table bed modular reactor technology, was that they could not establish or find a stabilizing isotope for the reactive process of the fuel used. I'm trying to remember the name of the mineral. It's used in nuclear heads. Everyone knows about it. It's just slipping my mind. The argument was that they are unable to find a stabilizing isotope that is able to keep the energy production chemical reaction stable without it exploding. And then yet I'm looking at the radioisotope project you are doing successfully, and I'm thinking to myself, could the key to the success of the PBMR have been found already with this project you are doing now? And you would not even be needing to go through load shedding. But because we are very popular for own goals, someone threw a very successful javelin to Westinghouse, and our technology is buried there in America. Buried. One day we must have an inquest on such things. With the funding that you are giving to postgraduates, what is the mechanism that the NRF uses to track, for lack of a better word, the return on investment on money spent on these postgraduate qualifications? Or is it that once a person graduates, they submit their thesis, it's successful, that's the measure? As a champion of knowledge production and innovation, there should be a measuring tool, in my opinion, that is able to benchmark whether we are getting what we pay for in knowledge production, and the conversion of such knowledge to the resolution of our problem. The knowledge does not exist for its sake. It exists to resolve the problems that are encountered by the society within which it produced. And so you write a journal, it's peer-reviewed, but the outcome of that knowledge has literally no impact on further development of the knowledge strata within which it's located. I think it's wasteful expenditure. In my opinion, if we are counting gowns and bells, we need to review our measuring tool. I think we need to review our measuring tool, because you can get gowns a dime a dozen. In actual fact, we are sitting with a problem in this country of unemployed graduates. They are unemployed for a reason. Knowledge acquisition is mismatched with the sectors within which we find ourselves developing at a rapid pace. And so by the time people exit the space of learning, they are prepared for a world that no longer exists. They are redundant, and you want to come to Parliament and say, no, we are doing well, we are producing so many graduates, but what is the impact, real impact, measured using a metric that speaks to their absorbability into the market, to their ability to generate new markets?
I think we should find a new metric. Otherwise, we are going to churn out educated criminals. You can imagine if you have a Thabo Bester who's organic, give him a master's, two PhDs, you are going to have a problem. Because he is qualified, but he is he does not have utility in the real sense of the word. Because he's qualified for a world that doesn't exist, but he would have the organic mind to concoct one or other schemes, because his thought process is now coherent. Because one of the key skills that education does, that it channels coherent thinking. You are able to now package thoughts. We are going to have criminals with packaged thoughts. Because the measure is that we are churning out gowns, we are celebrating graduation, but we are not seeing the real impact of these gowns in society. In
I just want to
In closing, I would want to say perhaps we should amend the regime of funding mechanisms to organs of state, the legal regime. The heavy dependence of, and I speak this in agreement with what the Honorable Whip was saying, the heavy reliance on the national fiscals to push in money into organs of state, when you can have collaborative effort and a regulated fiscal regime, could assist in pursuing some of these things at a much more accelerated pace. Speaking from the political party I'm from, we are not anti-capital. We have a cooperative and contested relationship with it. So the specific points, we cooperate, the others, we contest. And it's almost a dance. If you can think of the Paso Doble. The Paso Doble is a very spirited dance, very passionate. Sometimes the partner is pulled very close, and sometimes they are thrown very far. But the dance is beautiful to watch. Capital in its nature is a bully. If you don't keep hands on it and regulate it, they will run roughshod and use humans as cannon fodder. We do not agree to that perspective of capital. However, capital is able to fund progressive technology, innovation, solutions, but only if there is a benefit and a positive impact on the bottom line. We are in a Paso Doble dance with capital, with the party that I belong to. We will support positive collaboration that allows us to achieve what I spoke of when I started speaking. We will refuse its need to super exploit those who are historically disadvantaged, those who are of the lower rounds of society.
And so I would like to say, perhaps, Chair, the conversation should be to alter the fiscal legal framework to allow greater collaboration, so that when we see instances of lack of money, and in this instance, this department, its entities, when they say we need more money, you can, they don't return money. People who return money can't be saying they don't, they want more for what, to return again to the national treasuries. Those who don't return money must be given more, because there is a presence of leadership in those organs of state and department. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Yabo. Thank you very much to all honorable members for their comments, questions, recommendations, a lot of recommendations. And I really hope that when members make these recommendations, colleagues take a moment to reflect on them. I think sometimes, and I see we can't execute. We don't have the power of doing such a thing. So we cannot continuously remind you of the vision. And sometimes I think on your end, because you're doing the job, person and even more so with those, I always imagine the person who sits in a call center of NASFIS, for example. I always imagine a person who is responsible for processing payments or overseeing that ICT system as an NASFIS. They probably don't feel what Honorable Yabo just spoke about. There are khabulis, I don't know what you call it in English, Dr. Trello, umkhabulu. I'm not English. Conscientization, I don't have the same effect. Umkhabulu. Yeah. So, because I think we need to be recharged in understanding what exactly this budget is supposed to do, in understanding what exactly these plans are supposed to do. It's not just a plan with a few faces, a few people, say 35 farmers, that's 35. No, like, what is that 35, what are those 35 farmers supposed to do? What does it speak, what does it mean to support innovators? What is the long-term plan? What is the vision? What informs why these plans must be met, why they must be set, why they must be impactful, why they must be relevant, why they must follow SMART principles? Because what? And colleagues, I have to allow honorable members to express themselves, because they don't speak on their... We're not representing our jackets. Not here to represent the Yabo clan, or the King clan, or the Bishop Cohort there in Orania. No. You are representing millions of Africans. So I need to afford members the opportunity. I mean, how we must think of it is, take the whole country's population divided by the 11 members that are here, and then think of it from that. How long would it take us to listen to every single South African if they had to give their perspective on what DSI should be doing? How long would it take us, let's narrow it down, to the 400 members of parliament, if we were to listen to all 400 members of parliament and their views on what should be done in terms of science and innovation? So I want us to appreciate it from that aspect. We're going to break for lunch. We are literally fetching our lunch and coming back into the room. My goal is that we should hopefully, our program says we should be ending at 5:30. I know you guys are very innovative and succinct as this department in this sector, but I don't want to put pressure on anyone. So I think if we try and end at 6, that still should be okay. On my side, I just wanted to appreciate that if Naki spoke about the changes to the mandate, you can just share to us, you said you've done some work and it's gone to the minister already. So in terms of time frame, by when do you think we as a committee could start interacting with those changes?
And then, how much money would we need? Prof. Nelamondo, how much money would we need to fund all the applicants that meet our criteria? So if we just roughly can estimate from the last 3 years, those we would have taken, how much money would we need to fund all of them? And then Honorable Mananiso and Honorable, I think, yeah, we covered quite a few that we also had. I'm trying to think if I should send them via writing to yourself. But I mean, she asked about post Honorable Mananiso. You might have the 399 post vision, yeah? And the transfer. Okay, there's significant changes to transfers and subsidies. The allocation to various institutions for strategic science platforms for research and development increases from 97.3 million to 242.3 million. And then as well as the allocation to various institutions for infrastructure projects for research and development increases from 699.7 million to 899.6 million. Can you explain to us what has necessitated these particular changes and what will these allocations specifically fund considering that they've changed? Can you also just update us in relation to the 65 million that is needed to construct a fence around the Meerkat National Park? Have we managed to allocate that funding? And then if you can just explain to us what the 775 million towards the space infrastructure hub more specifically planned in the year 2023-2024. And then there's been, of course, significant changes in a number of the performance targets under Program 5. What factors or developments have informed these particular changes? And although these targets are new to being listed in the APP, how many are actually new ones and how many have been existing already? Particularly on the changes to budgets or the questions relating to budgets, CFO, you can send these in writing so that you know that's it from us. With that being said, it's 2:10. Well, can we please be back by 2:20 with you know, our food, and then we'll continue to the next entity. Thank you.